My name is Tony Mall. I'm a Detective Chief Superintendent, Head of the Northwest Counterterrorism Unit. The most basic way I can describe the Counterterrorism Unit is we're part of a national network. So there's four counterterrorism units based around the country. We're what we call the big units. We have all the intelligence capability and all the asset of investigators, undercover capability, all the things you'd expect. Basically, a sort of police service within a police service that specialises in counterterrorism. But we're linked nationally, which means the asset can move anywhere across the country. So if I need extra assets in the northwest of England, which I cover, which are five police forces, I can bring assets from around the country. Likewise, if London need assistance or the northeast, we can send officers. So we're all trained to national standards. So we're locally based, regionally coordinated, which is part of my role, but nationally led is one way I tend to describe it.
Talk me through your role as head of the counterterrorism unit. What is your job?
In a nutshell, I'm classed as the regional coordinator, so I coordinate the activity right from the finances to the business to staffing issues. A lot of my time is spent on, as you can imagine, operational activity, because that's where a lot of the risk is. On the other side, a proportion of my time is spent on what you would call the not-so-threatening side, is a probably better description. So that in a nutshell, is what I do.
So the listeners could look at it as, like, really, you're the man in charge of keeping our region safe?
Yes, with others. I've got a strong team that work with me. It is a team effort. It's not just about one person, you know, but I work particularly on the operational side that oversee all the operations, make sure they're staffed properly, make sure we're putting the right amount of effort into that particular threat, work with our partners in MI5 in terms of what they're doing. So there's a lot of aspects to my work which make it very challenging but very interesting.
Big responsibility on your shoulders, though.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, that's what we get paid for. And, you know, I've been in the police service for a long time now, and I've been doing this work for a number of years. But we take the responsibility seriously because you join the police service to protect people. And it's that basic. I do this job because we want to protect people. If you're a person in the northwest of England, myself and all of my staff do want to protect you. We want to make sure that you can go about your life in a productive and safe environment, and that's why we're here.
Pursue, prevent, protect and prepare, the four P's. In a nutshell, just talk me through each of those and what they actually mean.
Yeah, in the most simplistic terms, the pursue is the one you see on the news a lot, is when we make arrests. That's actually catching terrorists, is the most basic way to say it. Your prevent side is working with specialist officers around the country, and that is about safeguarding people. It's about preventing people being drawn into radicalisation and therefore drawn into terrorism. The protect side is basically where we do assessments for local authorities, for business. We engage with lots of different people with vulnerable sites, crowded places. So we give advice on if there were to be a terrorist attack, how we can mitigate that. And it can be bollards in the streets to stop certain types of attacks. It can be special glass, which doesn't harm if there's an explosion. Safe routes, training people, what happens if an attack actually occurs. So there's a lot of that type of work that goes on in the background, which people often don't see, but there's a big unit that do that nationally. And also our prepare. The prepare side is actually preparing ourselves, exercising, looking at our systems and processes and making sure that we are fit with purpose with not only ourselves, but with other police forces and our partners, that if an attack takes place or an incident occurs, that we all know what we're doing and our systems, processes and our methodologies are fit for purpose. And that's a continuous process.
Moving on to the face of terrorism, and how much has that changed in the last couple of years?
We've seen a huge increase in our work since the Islamic State, as they call themselves, formed. And a few years ago, Al-Qaeda were the big story, and they tended to be more towards directed, coordinated, sanctioned attacks, much bigger in scale, but much more sort of coordinated. That still goes on, so let's not forget about AQ. We're still doing the AQ work, but we've also got the threat of ISIS now, who use social media and try and encourage people to do their own thing, you know, get a knife, make your own little bomb, produce magazines. So that change in tempo has certainly seen an increase. And I think the figures sort of speak for themselves. Between the years 14 and 15, we've seen something like a 39% increase in arrests and activity. So it has had an effect on the way we operate.
Does that worry you that this type of behaviour is becoming a bit more common?
Well, I couldn't say it wouldn't. any increase in sort of terrorist activity is a worry. What I would say is that we responded well to it in terms of some of the prevent activity, I see. So there's a lot of things happening that people don't see. We try and identify people before they get anywhere near criminal or terrorist behaviour. So it's early intervention. They might be shown some basic signs that they're susceptible or vulnerable to radicalisation. So there's a huge amount of work going engaging with people on a one-to-one basis or groups, which actually is very successful. We don't see those people moving towards the more extreme end. What we have done is seen an increase, and I think it's because of that push of social media, which is an infinite world of information, that if you're susceptible or vulnerable to that type of information, you can go and find it. So if you go and find it and you make that choice to go down that path, that's where we've seen the increase of the people that have actually gone down and hunted down. Some people, as we've seen, families travelling to Syria, ease of travel through Turkey. So, you know, we have a common travel agreement in Europe and all these things. All the freedoms we enjoy, so do people that want to do illegal activity, because it is illegal to go out and join ISIS, a terrorist organisation. And we take a robust approach, you know, so we will arrest you if we think you're trying to get out there. We will try and disrupt you if we think you're genuinely trying to get out to join ISIS, because you may be a threat if you come back to this country. And that's only right and proper to protect the public.
You talked about radicalisation. Would you say that radicalisation is now being used as a weapon, really, by the likes of ISIS and other extreme groups?
I think they'd like to. That is their general thrust. They are trying to encourage people to join the cause. You know, if you can't get out to join us, do something in your home country. But actually, when you look at how many attacks actually take place and how many we've disrupted, they're not that successful, really. We haven't had a major attack on British soil for a considerable period, and you know, there can never be guarantees that we won't have an attack, but we've disrupted an awful lot. We've engaged in the prevent world with an awful lot of people. So I think their scatterbomb approach, as I talk about, just firing this stuff out and trying to get somebody, there'll always be somebody out there that grabs the message. It's up to us as the police, the wider public, professional agencies to actually spot those and actually disrupt them. And like I said, the figures I've given you in terms of the arrest rates and disruptions are very high. So, you know, we have a successful model.
That links into the changing face of terrorism, the lone attacker. You know, we're not talking about group attacks now. We're talking about lone radicalised attacks. How much of a risk does the lone attacker pose?
Well, there is a risk there. I mean, we've seen it around Europe, haven't we? You know, we've seen lone actor attacks. And, you know, the recent events in Tunisia sort of speak for themselves. The most difficult area is to actually spot somebody. And that's why I often say, if you're concerned about something, and I'll say your gut feeling, if somebody's got a change of behaviour, they're isolating themselves, you know they might be looking at material that you find uncomfortable. There's lots of different reasons, but you can report people through the terrorist hotline. You can report it to your local police station. As long as we get that information, we can do an assessment. We assess a lot of people out. We get information about people. We find it's nothing. And we basically put it to bed. We're not going to take any action. But there are people out there who people can spot. We can do a professional assessment. That's what my officers are trained to do. We have set criteria, and then we can progress onto an investigation if we need to. Or, better still, it's really early, and we can engage them overtly. The more we do that and the earlier we spot, the more successful that we are and can be.
How vital is it, that public information that comes through to you?
We do get information about certain people. And, you know, the young man in Blackburn, for instance, that was information that came initially via Prevent. That was Prevent teams actually engaging with somebody but be actually remaining concerned about them. And it eventually that's escalated to an arrest that's uncovered some information that has stopped an attack in Australia. So that's a great example of people being concerned, doing the right thing, reporting it, not letting go. We continue with our assessment, and eventually you've got that outcome. It's a rare one, but nevertheless, every single one of those jobs that we disrupt is a success. We work with our partners in MI5. There's only, you know, a few thousand of us, you know, in terms of proportion to the country of a, you know, an estimated 70 odd million population. We just play a small part in terms of numbers. So the more eyes and ears we have, the better. So the public play a massive role. charities, local education, local health, local authorities, local neighbourhood police officers, all those people that we can have access to. If they work with us and report suspicious behaviour or items or things they're concerned about, and then we can take the appropriate action.
What are sort of your main worries and fears, would you say, as head of the North West Counterterrorism Unit?
Well, your worry is always the same, as if something gets through. And that's why we appeal to the public. That's why I say I want these assessments. My team should and are busy. And that comes with the territory. But if you decide to do something spontaneous, so if I decided in my head to hit you now, there's no warning signs of it. I just do it. So that's a shock to everyone. You know, not only will I be arrested and in trouble, but the spontaneous, when somebody in their own head decides to do something and shows no signs or doesn't tell anyone, they're the ones that you worry about. Very, very rare. They just get a lot of publicity. So they're the things that sort of concern you. And that is why working with our partners, working with, you know, the fire brigade, with education, with the public, with neighbourhood policing officers, is really important to us. And that's why we do it, because early signs are always the best. There's usually somebody that knows. So when something's happened, somebody else, either one or two people know about it, and there's often signs there. It's the bit that we want to do is capture those signs. It's an interesting statement. I've talked a lot about prevent. I've talked a lot about protecting people and, you know, early engagement. We don't want to see people arrested. But I have no compulsion. It doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter what background you're from. If I think you're going to harm somebody and we've got the right intelligence case that's been professionally assessed and the right evidential case, I will take action and my staff will take action if we think anyone's in danger. And that's the hard edge of what we do. I'd like to think that the public think there's a bunch of people there that aren't frightened to go out and do the job. There is a soft side to us, there is an engagement side, you know, but there is a hard edge to us.
Do you ever switch off from this job?
In truth, I think the answer is no. I just don't think you can. It's a huge commitment. You know, the hours are long, the phone calls are numerous and they never end. The responsibility is huge, but, you know, the sort of weight that sits on your shoulders, being perfectly honest, it's there all the time, isn't it? We see the television, you know, and every time you see an attack anywhere in the world, you know, working in this business, you get worried. What I don't want is some of the things I've seen on the television happening here. And nobody does. And that's our job, to do our very best to stop it. But it's a privilege to do this job. And I've got absolutely no complaints about being busy and being under pressure. And I think the public would expect that, and rightly so. That's what they pay me for. That's what I'm here for.
Does it affect your first thought in the morning and your last thought at night? Does it tend to be work-related?
Yeah, it is my first thought and my last thought. But that, to me, is normal, and that's the way it should be. I'm sure you want me doing my job as best I can every day. And I'd like to think that's what the public want. And what I can reassure is my officers do, and I'm not the only one that thinks like that.
Tell me a bit about you outside of the job. You're a family man, I believe, and what you like to do when you're not working.
Yeah, I'm just like any other ordinary person. That I do activities with my kids, taxi driver, financer, generally to be abused by children, I think. That's what they seem to do. They just take advantage of a father. But it's great, yeah, and they do sort of help me wind down from this job, because it's very intense. What both myself and my staff do.
Is it always going to be a constant battle, fighting terrorism? Is the battle being won, or is it always going to be that constant battle?
I'm not sure constant battle is the right word. I think it develops. When I first came into the counter-terrorism network in around 2009 in Manchester, Syria was stable, Libya was still stable in terms of its threat. I think as events change around the world, terrorism changes with it. I mean, at one time, in the 80s, it was all Irish-related terrorism. You don't hear that so much now, but it's still there. We still have a portfolio for Irish-related terrorism, as we do left-wing, right-wing. It just changes. I think ISIS, because they've declared themselves a caliphate, and there's a big argument about that as well, I think that's here for a bit. It's shown no sign at the moment of going away. But I think it'll change and it'll form and it'll adjust in time, and there'll be other world problems. So I just think the threat changes. We've got to keep on top of that. We do a lot of work around emerging threats. So we're always looking worldwide on a sort of analytical basis. What's happening over here? What's happening over there? How will it affect the communities of the Northwest? How will it affect the communities of this country? What do you think the response is going to be to that? So we can try and get ahead of the game, really.